Welcome to the Amaze podcast. Amaze creates free educational videos and resources to help families talk openly, honestly, and less awkwardly about sex, health, relationships, and growing up. Our goal is to help you become an askable parent so your kids trust that you're their go-to for honest, non-judgmental information. In today's episode, I chat with the amazing Melissa Pinter Carnegie of Sex Positive Families on how to talk to kids about porn. Melissa and I talk about mainstream versus ethical porn, what to do if your child is seeking out porn, how to create a sex-positive culture in your family, and more. Let's have a listen.
I'm so delighted to have Melissa from Sex Positive Families on the line today. Hello!
Hi, Christine! It's so good to see you and everyone out there.
But Melissa, can you just share with everybody a little bit of brief background about your work and the incredible community you have built as Sex Positive Families? I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, thank you. So it's been cool because Amaze and Sex Positive Families, we've kind of been growing together around the same amount of time. So for Sex Positive Families, it's been since June of 2017 is when we launched. I always say we, but it is me, and I've had lots of great volunteers and folks I've contracted with and everything along the journey. And it really has been a community. Lots of parents and caring adults, youth and family serving professionals who have joined along, you know, this mission of raising sexually healthy children and being really bold about it and unapologetic, because really at the core of it is a desire to do better than many of us received growing up, to be the parents that we wish that we had. Because you know, there are so many gaps around comprehensive sex, around sex ed, and certainly, you know, comprehensive sex ed, not just in the U.S., but across the world. And so the response to the education and the messaging and the calls to action have just been wonderful. And every day parents are sharing about the ways that they're tackling conversations with more confidence and with the ability now to create connection that really supports the sexual health of young people. So for me, I'm a social worker by way of education and training. I was in the field of sexual health as far as HIV and sexually transmitted infections for a decade before I started Sex Positive Families. So I really had the chance to see the impact of sex, you know, what sex education and what knowledge around bodies and stigma, how all of these components and shame, how all of these can factor into the decision-making of us as humans when it comes to sex and bodies and consent and relationships. And I worked at the nonprofit and the state government level. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and did all of that while parenting. So I myself have a 6-year-old bonus son. I have a 10-year-old son and then a 21-year-old daughter. And so I've been in the trenches of parenting, and I didn't grow up with these messages, sex positive messaging, grew up with Catholic influences in my household, Black and Latinx culture, and in Texas, as far as sex ed or lack thereof. And so I knew as I approached my own parenting journey that I wanted to do better. I wanted to make sure that my daughter had an understanding of her body, had an understanding of her rights to pleasure and without shame. And I knew that really the way to do that was to pull back the curtain, create conversation and connection versus silence and shame.
Yes.
And so that's what I've done in my parenting. And so through the years of applying all of the things that we talk about in the work, and then also learning things through education and through working in the field, because we can all acquire this knowledge around sex ed. It's all around us. But it can be harder to do and to apply if we've been survivors or thrivers of trauma, which trauma comes in so many forms. If you've made it to adulthood, you've survived some levels of trauma. And just figuring out how to get brave and to really get vulnerable and connect with young people in ways that we needed. So that's really what I do. I do it in virtual spaces. I do it in person through workshops. And I've also had the great pleasure of working with a global reproductive health organization called Engender Health. So I have another job alongside Sex Positive Families. And through that, I get to teach sex ed in schools to middle and high school age students. And so that allows me to you know, really be in the moment of creating and facilitating safe spaces for youth and for young people to learn about these topics. And I also teach youth serving professionals how to deliver comprehensive sex ed with confidence and in sex positive and shame free ways. So sex ed all day, all night.
Yeah, all day, all night. Well, I wanted to, you know, you used the word brave just a minute ago, and I want to just kind of like put a pin in that for people, because I think that part of, you know, I think as when you become a parent, it's quite humbling. I don't know. So I had zero sex ed conversations with my very traditional Korean parents, zero. And I think that, you know, obviously that makes this all kind of like unknown, kind of scary territory. But I think that's where we like step in and embrace, because I think I know that, you know, when I became a mom and was going through all the things where I actually had to learn about my body, like, because I was going to make another one, I was like, wow, like, I do not want I'm a grown adult and there are all these things that I don't know. So I want to like do better. So I guess I would just like to invite parents who might be feeling a little intimidated or a little squeamish to like, just look at this as a moment to like dive in a really positive and awesome way, and to just change, you know, we can change the narrative that's happening. And I think that's like one of the exciting things, you know, that makes me so excited about this work that you're doing, that we're doing here at Amaze. And, you know, it just keeps me going. We'll start general and then we'll go sort of into this conversation. I have some specific questions that I wanted to talk to you about how to talk to kids about porn. But the general question is, how can you be sex positive with your kids when you were raised sex negative? I'm sure you get this a lot. Like, what would be a concrete tip or two that you could recommend people take with them?
Yeah. So first and foremost, it's always taking a look at your own journey and having some compassion for yourself and your own journey, and knowing that none of us come into this world with shame. Shame is absolutely, you know, something, either shame or a lack of worthiness. All of those things are projected onto us. And that can look very differently depending on what identities we hold in this world. And so having that self-compassion and getting clear about your why. Why is it that you may want to create or facilitate a different experience for the young people in your world? What is it that you've experienced or that you wish you had experienced that you would like to create for your young people? And because you absolutely have that ability to do that. And so even though you've had certain messaging that, you know, maybe sex negative, that can give you that lens to know maybe what not to do or how not to approach it, because you personally know what that felt like. And so I talk a lot about storytelling and how storytelling can be really important. Sex ed isn't just, and sex positivity, all of it isn't just about giving kids specific facts, you know, or education around these topics. A lot of it is about connection. And so even if it comes down to starting the conversation with your young person by saying, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't have someone who was talking to me about topics like sex and bodies and relationships. And I've realized I want to do differently with you. I want you to have information and support that I didn't have. And even this is helpful for folks who may feel like they're later in the game. They might have a tween or a teen and they didn't maybe start early with this stuff. They can just acknowledge that. Just say, you know, I realize that I've been a little silent about these topics. And that's because of the way I grew up, and I want to try to do differently with you. And so I'm, how do you feel about us talking about these things more?
I love that, because I think it's the ability to sort of recognize that we need to jump in wherever we are is so important. And also that this is like a good time to just say, you know, there is never one talk. There are like a million of them and you get a ton of do-overs. So like just dive in and go. I think that is so, so crucial. Okay. Well, so the reason we wanted to talk to you right now in particular about porn is because there's an awful lot more screen time, right? Mm-hmm. So that is just the reality. I mean, part of it is an actual practical reality because kids are now doing distance learning, but also, you know, recreation, whatever. So I'm curious about, you know, you have a very robust community at Sex Positive Families, and I'm curious what you're seeing on this topic. Are people sort of worried that more screen time is leading to more porn? Are they asking questions about it? Like, what are you seeing in your community right now?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely lots of folks that are sharing that their young people are having some exposures, either intentional or unintentional. Remembering that we're all going through an experience right now with this, right? And our young people are absolutely no different. And we're being told to distance, to social and physical distance ourselves. And that could send a message that pulls us away from connection. And so, yeah, porn, sexually explicit media, sex online can seem like an avenue for connection. And so it can be easy for our young people right now to, again, either accidentally stumble across it or intentionally seek it out. And so one thing that is a motto at Sex Positive Families is prepared, not scared. So we don't approach the porn conversations or any conversations with a lens of trying to fear you, you know, put fear in you as parents or give you all these statistics about what, you know, to be afraid of what your child could be doing. That creates disconnect. Fear creates disconnect. What we're really needing to do is lean in with our young people and start having conversations. Use them as teachable moments, as opportunities to check in with our young people, because connection is what will make there many times a desire to seek connection out elsewhere. It'll minimize that. And you'll be sending the message that you are a safe space for questions, for curiosities, and to connect.
Yeah, well, let's dig into this a little bit more, because I think, you know, one of the things that I'm sure you hear this all the time, one of the things that we hear a lot at Amaze is that, you know, people are kind of like, okay, that's a great idea. And also, I have no idea what to say. So please tell me exactly what to say. Yeah. So in the instance of, let's say, you know, your kid is doing their homework or whatever, and they get some pop-up, basically an accidental stumbling situation. And you either notice it or they come to you. Tell me what are the words people should be searching for or using?
Yeah. So first of all, if a young person ever comes to you with something like that, always acknowledge first, I'm so glad that you came to me. Just acknowledge, you know, what happened and give that affirmation. We never want them to feel afraid to come to us with any truth or with any topic at all. So no topic is taboo. If they feel like they're going to get in trouble, they're more likely to hide or be in secrecy with their curiosities or their exploration or with something that happens that could be potentially unsafe. So first thing is affirming that or affirming their question. And then we just want to acknowledge what is. And this is an opportunity to just say, you know what? The internet is big. There are lots of things online. And sometimes those things could involve pictures of naked people. It could involve people having sex. That's can be called porn, pornography. So you want to name what this is, because you don't want them to get information from gossip, you know, or from peers or from folks that might have unsafe motives. And so if we give them, you know, the words, if we name porn or pornography or sexually explicit media, then they become more informed and more aware, and can it helps to develop their critical lens. So let them know that they, at any point, they could stumble across these things. You can talk about together, how can we as a home help to create safer scenarios online? And so ideally, you know, parental controls is definitely an option, especially if you have younger kids online. There are ways on all of these different platforms that you can create some filters that create safer environments online. It's not foolproof. There are definitely still opportunities, especially YouTube. YouTube is, you know, a popular site for young people of many ages, and it's not perfect in its filtering. So we want to acknowledge that these types of things could at any point be seen, and then let them know what to do. So if you ever see something online that, and acknowledge that that's made for adults. And so say, you know, if you ever see something online like that, come talk to me, let me know, because I want to make sure that I can answer any questions you might have, or that we're clear about what it was that you might have seen. Mm-hmm. So again, just create a safe space. Note the tone that I'm even using right now, just really casual, really relaxed. And so when we're introducing or continuing the conversation about things like sex or nudity, I use those terms. And so ideally, we're talking about all of these topics outside of just the context of porn or outside of just a situation or a moment that happens, because everything will build upon itself. So if you haven't talked about sex yet, and that's what's kind of making you nervous about having these talks, then definitely don't wait until something flashes online or on a screen or you're worried about device usage. Start now, start today, and say, you know what? I realize we've not talked about something, and it's sex. And then you can ask, what have you already heard about sex?
Yes.
Questions, starting with questions gives you a moment to take a breath. And it also helps you to know what's already in their mind, what's already in their brain. What then can you leverage as far as clearing up any misconceptions or misinformation that they may have or have received? Or again, finding some common language and some common ground for these topics together.
Yeah. I wanted to, this reminds me that it's a really good intersection, because here's a teachable moment. That's perfect. And I think also, you know, it's interesting. I think one of the reasons people get very hung up about some of the sex ed stuff is because they feel, especially with young children, there are a lot of people who come out and say, you can't talk to young children about X, Y, or Z. And a lot of the times the conversations have nothing, you're not even talking about sex or whatever. So I wanted to give people a personal example that I was just dealing with yesterday with my 9-year-old, because I think it's very helpful and relevant to this particular conversation. So people might know that Zoom bombing has been a thing that the internet has been wrestling with, and people creeping on Zooms and somehow hacking their way into Zooms. And, you know, my 9-year-old has been having, Zoom chats with friends. Like, that's how she's staying connected. So it was actually really great, because I said to her, okay, so, you know, the internet is kind of a big, wild, crazy place. And sometimes, you know, people kind of get weird. And there's been this thing happening with Zooms where some people are finding their way into a room. And so I'm going to teach you how to lock the room after your friends come in. Nice. So, and it was great, because she said, we talked nothing about, no creepy specifics, but I just said, do you have questions about that? And she said, that sounds kind of creepy. I'm like, it is creepy. And that was it. And then she knew how to lock the room. So I guess I just wanted to bring that up, because it's a good example of how you can convey to a younger child that, you know, you have to be vigilant and smart about using the internet. And sometimes there's a necessary action that you need to take. Like, you were talking about what to do when somebody comes, you know, if a kid comes to you. But that with younger kids, you can start the groundwork now. And it's so important.
Yeah. What I love about your example is that behind all of that, what you're saying is, I trust that you have the ability to make an informed choice when I give you the information. Behind that, you're also saying that you trust yourself as the parent to be there to support her along that journey. Mm-hmm. Whenever we avoid conversations, behind it, we're saying that we're afraid that we don't trust our young people. And at young ages, they can absolutely apply the skills and the knowledge if they're given the tools and the opportunity to give it a try. And they often will love to try that level of responsibility and get that affirmation afterwards. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the flip side scenario, which is, I think the one that parents often are treading. And if you somehow find out that your kid is accessing porn, like, what would you say are, you know, some accepting, productive, you know, just some ways to tackle that conversation, to open the conversation if you've somehow discovered it later, or to deal with it in a way that they don't shut down immediately if you, you know, stumble upon it in the moment? What would your advice be to people for how to talk about it?
Yeah, so I get this question a lot, and also in regards to monitoring and if mm-hmm. they find something, and then should they say that they found it? You know, they don't want to shame them by doing so. It's not like a gotcha kind of thing. So I want to just kind of take it back a moment to monitoring is a helpful step. It should be done in collaboration with the young person. So we don't want the young person feeling, because this all, again, will ultimately support more of a shame-based message. We want the young person to see your family as a team in all things, and then especially in this. So when you're giving access to devices, or you know they have devices in the home, then start to talk about some ground rules and some agreements about device usage. You know, what times and for which devices, you know, and in what areas are we allowed to have access to it? If there are parental controls, then talk about that. Be very open and very candid. We're not trying to open up like a surveillance operation. That's really mm-hmm. not a healthy way to go about it, because then you're consuming a lot of your energy on just trying to catch your young person mm-hmm. being a curious young person. And so that's the other level, as parents knowing that today it's the internet and it's Pornhub. We were young people once too. And mm-hmm. so wherever generationally we are, so for me, you know, it was HBO Real Sex. Like, there wasn't, you know, the internet quite yet, you know, for my age, but HBO Real Sex. For some people, it might've been some magazines, you know, mm-hmm. because at the heart of it is during the, you know, the years of puberty and change, there's a curiosity. A lot of times it's, am I normal? Is my body normal? Am I wanted? Am I desired? There's feelings of attraction, all of that. So if we as parents can first normalize within ourselves and know that this interest and curiosity around bodies and around sex is normal and it's age congruent, it's just that present day, there are different resources that young people have.
Yeah.
And so if we don't demonize young people, or again, disconnect ourselves from knowing what it might be like to be curious about that, then that's a helpful thing. But then going into, so again, if you're creating a culture where at home, young people are aware that of the responsibilities that they are expected, that all people are expected around devices and device usage, and if there are any monitoring elements in place, who to turn to if they ever see something that might be concerning or questionable. And even if they do have a interest or a curiosity about that, normalizing that can be normal to have that curiosity. Or if their friends are talking about certain porn sites, or if sexting, which is another thing that could be amping up right now with this isolation. Any of those things, you know, could be going on at any time, and parents understanding that could be age congruent for tweens and teens if they have access to devices independent from parental supervision. And so, parents making sure that they are talking with their young person. And if they come across an instance of learning that their young person has had access, then they will want to check in with their young person. Again, not from a gotcha perspective, but from a, you know, it could be, hey, I noticed, again, because mm-hmm. if the fact that monitoring is happening isn't a secret, then that's helpful. And you could say, hey, I noticed on some browser history, or I noticed something popped up. And so I just wanted to check in with you about what I saw. And then just, you know, whatever it was that you saw, you want to check in, say, you know, are you curious? Are you interested? Tell me a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. And so make it a safe space for them to share without you diving in with your own assumptions or with your own fears about what it was. And there could be some things that could make you feel disturbed, you know, that you could see or make you feel worried. Or could frustrate you because of messages you're trying to instill in your young person. And then if they're searching for certain things or it appears as though. So it's good to not lead with assumptions and to ask and inquire. And again, open up that space where they can feel safe to share with you what they were experiencing, what their intentions were, and just being open to receiving what that is and problem solving together. And you can then share what your concerns might be, you know, mm-hmm. and be very clear about that. Say, I support that your curiosity or your interest in learning about sex or your desire to understand or feel what sex may feel like. These are my concerns. I'm concerned about what the messages in porn can send. And you can talk about those things, you know? And so it's just all about communication.
Now, I want to get to a question that we had kind of at the front of this, which is related to what we're talking about. I would appreciate some guidance on how to enforce family rules around porn when kids know how to use incognito mode. Okay. So you're trying to monitor, but then how do you handle that?
Yeah. So I think what I'm gathering from the question maybe is that if you are opening up the conversations and they're not being kept in secrecy, then yeah, if these are tools that young people can have. So by affirming for them again, that like, I know that this is a time where these curiosities can come up and that porn is a tool that's available and that's out there. These are my concerns again about it. And so this is where we're talking about media literacy. Mm-hmm. And so if we're applying concepts around media literacy, which I will say commonsensemedia.org is a really great resource for understanding the concept of media literacy. But we want them to understand that, especially mainstream porn, so the like the Pornhub and the RedTube, so these tube sites, the ones that when you Google these terms or whatever, those are the things that are going to pop up first.
Okay.
So these are not ethically sourced. Okay. And so when we talk about mainstream porn versus ethical porn, so with ethical porn, what we're in feminist porn, this is porn that is made with an attention to the fair wages and rights of the performers, of you know, treatment of the performers, of consent. And so these are deeper level conversations, but it's also a helpful way to help your young person develop a critical lens and to say that this stuff that's for free, you know, online is often a lot of videos that are shared without the consent of the actual performers.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you're curious about, you know, sex and bodies and relationships, I'd love if you came to me. Or I'd love if, and then you can talk about other resources that are out there. Scarlatine.com is a really great resource. Having books in your home that help young people learn about sex. Heather Corinna is an author, the founder of Scarlatine, who has a great book about sex for teens and tweens. But when you, again, create a home culture where these conversations are not taboo, where access to the information is not limited, then there, young people are less likely to go just seeking out things like porn, which are easily accessible without the lens of realizing that, wow, you know, these videos are not being like made ethically. And this is a lot of these videos are violating the rights of the people that are making them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can talk to them about, again, there's ethical porn. You have to pay for that. And so if it's not behind the paywall, so that's one like red flag. If the porn is not behind a paywall and asking you for a fee, then, so my point is that what you want to foster in your young person is kind of a lens and an eye for some social justice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can absolutely do that, again, if within your home, you're approaching conversations around media in general. Because even when we watch movies, we watch commercials, we're watching just videos on YouTube. Who was that made for? You know, who made the video? Who was it made for? Who's being represented? Who's being left out of the conversation? These are questions that we want them to develop a lens for so that, again, they're just randomly searching for information.
Right.
Will be less likely because they have access to information and support and reliable resources around them already.
That's perfect. It's so fabulous. You segued into that because we actually had a question. I would love to know how to explain and promote the concept of ethical porn for young people. And then another one that came in advance of the talk which is, are you aware of ethical porn sites that could be made available, or are we best to not give input into the search, the search options? So, I mean, it is like, you know, it's a little bit, do people go, if they're interested in having this conversation with their kids, I mean, can you Google ethical porn and come up with something that's not like dodgy, or, you know, or have the not ethical porn people totally paid for Google search and made and messed the whole thing up?
No, I promise, because again, because of the nature of the work that I do, I Google things like this all the time. So absolutely. Yeah. If you Google,
I know my search terms are all messed up.
If you Google ethical porn, if you Google feminist porn, what comes up in the top of those searches are lots of great articles that people have written. So without using this space to necessarily plug particular sites, you can do that Google search on your own, and you can find great articles that are like, you know, the top 8 or the top 9 ethical sites and ethical porn sites. And so, yeah, it can give you, if you're an adult that's curious because you weren't aware that this existed, or you want to learn more about what these sites are really about. Generally, they're ones that are created by women or by queer folks with an attention to marginalized voices, and with an attention to, again, fair treatment, fair wages of the performers. People can choose sex work as and performance, you know, within porn as a career, and they can do that in ways that are healthy and that are fulfilling to them. And so there are websites that have porn, that create porn with attention to that level of ethics and social justice. So it's just not the stuff that's going to come up on if you search, you know, certain body parts or sexual acts or things like
yes.
that.
Yes. And then we have a question for you, Melissa. It is, we have talked to our son about porn, letting him know it's normal and nothing to be ashamed of. But go you. But we have found, we feel he is too young to understand that it's just as real as a superhero movie. We've put limits on his time and location usage for his devices, but we have accidentally found that he continues to access it by sneaking around. What can we do to address it?
So I'll just say this blanketly, like, you know, for teens, tweens, brain development, right, is happening, you know, on into the early 20s. And so it is going to be very common that young people, because of their brain still developing, will make risky decisions. And that can look differently across different things. And if for your young person, it looks like it's related to porn, or, you know, sex or bodies or curiosities around that. And even if you're being very, very open and you're creating an open environment, and they're still seeking this, then it's important that you just continue the conversations. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing something wrong or that you're not taking all of the right kind of precautions. Your young person is a whole and separate autonomous human being. We cannot control, and that's not the goal. The goal is not to control them. The goal mm-hmm. is to help prepare them for their decision making. And so along the path, we offer feedback. We check in. If we notice that we've made an agreement as a family and that agreement appears to have been broken or compromised, we revisit the conversation. And through that act, you know, of continually checking in and being open to that process, which again, I can't guarantee that if you say this one thing, he'll stop, or if Right. you do this one thing, he'll stop. Again, you know your family and your child best. Just keeping an open dialogue and not moving yourself into a police officer, you know, role will help to, through that, learn a little bit more about what is motivating your young person to seek out this you know, porn or again, any kind of risky behavior that you feel like they are engaging in. It's important that we get to know what's going on in our young person's world. And if, you know, if they're experiencing anxiety about something, you know, if it has to do with, again, their own body, or if they're seeking connection with other people, or if they're experiencing arousal, if they're like high time in puberty, you know, period, and they're feeling really aroused or seeking pleasure, then you can talk about what are some ways, again, that you can enjoy pleasure that don't have to be dependent on porn, you know, on watching porn or on external. It's just about diving in and exploring and walking alongside your young person instead of in conflict with them.
Yes. What a great framing. So somebody asked a question, which you teed up quite perfectly, about masturbation. Tell parents, how do you handle that if you either walk in or you find out? Or, I mean, I think there'll be parallels to this conversation, but, you know, specifically in related to masturbation, like, how do you tackle that with your kids?
Yeah. So the first thing is, if you were to walk into your young person's room and they're masturbating, you apologize for stepping in without knocking and you'll walk on out. Because
I can imagine like the collective sigh of relief, people being like, great, I can do that.
Yeah. Walk on out. Because you know what? There are a lot of layers here. So again, privacy is an important piece to this. Sexuality, a big part of all of this is parents understanding that sexuality isn't something that you age into with puberty or with hormones. Sexuality is lifespan. It's with us from womb to tomb, as one of my favorite sex educators, Michelle Hope, says, who she has a wonderful book out there that's Sex Education for Girls. But from womb to tomb. So it's with us our whole lives, which creates a lot of great opportunities to talk about all these topics. But it's important for parents to know that and understand that because our young people are getting to know their bodies from infancy, right? And even in utero, in womb, they're getting to know their bodies. And we want to encourage, not discourage that. And that can be harder to do if we grew up with being like hands swatted away, if we went anywhere near our genitals, or if we were touching our bodies. There's some relearning or unlearning and then relearning that adults are having to do. But when we're younger, we don't have that shame. We're not born with that. Our bodies are our bodies and our bodies are our choices in terms of how we want to care for our bodies. And a connection to our bodies is what helps keep us safer ultimately. And so when parents can understand that too, is that through a young person exploring their body, and it's not always about the genitals, you know, it could be even just recognizing that if you stroke your hair and you feel like that feels good to you, do you have the language and the context to explain that to someone else? Just the same as if your hair got pulled and that didn't feel good to you, would you be able to speak up about that? Would you know what to say and how to describe that? That helps you have a connection to your body and develop the language that keeps you safer. So related to masturbation is a process that can happen as an activity that can happen in toddlerhood on through. And so the best thing that parents can do is not shame it, not shut it down, acknowledge that it could happen. And you can help a young person find private spaces for it, because social norms in our society are not such that masturbation is socially acceptable to happen out just in public spaces. And so our job is just to help young people understand social norms around that. And so, just acknowledging that it can feel good to touch our genitals, because our genitals have a lot of nerve endings packed into small places, and that it's great that you're getting to know your body. This is a great time to make sure they know accurate terms for their body, for penis, for clitoris, for anus, for breasts and nipples, you know, all these parts that can be really sensitive. Just acknowledging that masturbation or self-pleasure is something that they have access to. You can redirect them if necessary to their room or bathtub, just spaces wherever in the home they can have their own private space. It's not something that they're doing wrong. You know, it's them getting to know their body, and body aware young people is a goal.
Absolutely. Well, I love the way that you use the example with hair, either like touching it or getting it yanked, and just that framing of how, I forget, you said it very eloquently. It was something about how body awareness, you know, will help you, like that's like, will keep you safe. I think that's, you said it something like that, because, you know, it occurs to me that that is what will help you advocate for yourself in the future. And I had not heard it framed like that. So that is very cool. That is very cool.
That's a lot of what we do with SPF is a lot of reframing, because unfortunately a lot of us grew up with abrupt and shame-based messaging about this stuff. And then you hear it so much, and our society sends so many mixed messages. We have a sex negative culture, but it's very yes. sexualized and eroticized, and sex is about selling things. So it just can send a very difficult message for adults then to have to figure out how to teach all of this to a young person when we're still trying to figure it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I love that when you talked about the reframing, because I think one of my favorite pieces of advice that I've picked up, I don't know if you know the educator Brad Troger, he works on the advisory board for Amaze, and I haven't actually met him in person, but it's like I know him through the internet now. But he said something great, which was that, and it was actually in relation to porn, and he said, just because your kid asks you about something doesn't mean they're doing it. And I thought that was so smart. So I just wanted to toss that out there to people, because I think that when kids come to you, you know, part of this is all about, you know, being receptive, maybe asking, oh, what do you think about that? Whatever. Just to remember, like, the bad thing or the scary thing, you know, might not actually be happening. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, the saying about assuming things, right? Makes an ass out of you and me is the thing. But basically, yes, to that point.
I'm going to use that. I'm totally using that. That is like so appropriate for so many things. It's ridiculous.
I mean, hey, you know, it's true. It's important that we don't jump in with our assumptions. So I love that you shared that quote, and that we have to ask, you know, and say, again, what do you think about that? Have you heard of that before? What do you know about that? Are your friends talking about that? Because sometimes our young people can find more safety and comfort in talking about a topic if they're framing it as somebody else has experienced it or somebody else is curious about it, and maybe not so much that they are. So be open and receptive to that. Take every question, every curiosity seriously that your young person has. This is not the opportunity to turn it into a joke, or, you know, to kind of poke fun at them about any of this stuff, because they're paying attention to every reaction and every response that we might have. And that's giving them information as to whether this is really a safe and a brave space for them to be able to talk about these things. And so guess what, though? Even if you did that today or yesterday, because, again, it triggered your own discomfort, and you resorted to maybe joking about it or whatever, you can go back and you can say, you know what? I realized that I didn't react well to when you asked me that question about blank, you know? I would love a do-over. Or what I could have done differently was this. And I just want to apologize to you, you know? So again, just showing up in very human ways, giving your young people the respect that they deserve. You'll see different behaviors and outcomes from them when you treat them like human beings, you know, that are capable of and deserving of information and support.
I love that. That is so important. And hello, can I just say that by modeling simple things like saying, I'm sorry, I kind of messed that up, or that didn't go the way I wanted, like, you are equipping your kid with resilience skills. So like, this is like the double win. I feel like I'm constantly talking about this in my parenting work. It's just like, I feel like, you know, modern parenting, whatever that term means, you know, there is this total ridiculous perception that we need to, you know, not show our tough days or like get it all right or whatever. And that is just the opposite of what needs to be happening. So I love those. And I also wanted to put in a plug for the totally valid response. I don't know. Like, if a kid has a question, and like, how about we look that up together? Yeah. You know, something, because I feel like, again, same lane of conversation, you know, parents are very scared when they don't know, you know, or about being asked about something they don't know, but it is so good to show your kids that you guys can like do something together, find information together, or you can say, I'll look that up and get back to you, whatever it is.
Yep. We have to model vulnerability, and we have to model empathy if we want them to have permission to have those same feelings and experiences. So definitely, that is such a great question. I do not know the answer to that. Let's look that up together. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a bonding moment, and you can, you know, express your genuine reaction to learning something new, because we're sending them a false narrative if we're trying to be superheroes, or if we're trying to act like encyclopedias. They don't want encyclopedias. They just want us to be there. They want us to be accessible. They want us to be warm. And that's the best gift that we can give them, because again, it gives them permission to do the same. They will have a lot less anxiety if they're able to show up in the world authentically as they are. And we will get to experience that kind of freedom and liberation as well, if we're not trying to hold up a facade that's unrealistic.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts about navigating different sexual values in the family and community?
So number one, get clear about what yours are. Okay. Especially if you're the parent and you're asking this question, get clear about what your values are and where those came from, what influenced them, what motivated them. Know that those values can shift and change, but what are they today when it comes to sex and bodies and relationships and consent and what influences those? Talk with any other caregivers, primary caregivers that might be involved in taking care of whichever, you know, children are involved. See where you align, see where there might be some disconnects. Know that it is good for our children to experience different styles of parenting, different styles of ideas and values. If there are certain things that feel non-negotiable to you, again, understand why and advocate. Advocate hard for it. If it's something that, again, consent is a really big one. If you're really trying to create a culture of consent in your home and you've got relatives who are, you know, really handsy or grabsy or entitled or feel like they should have access to those hugs and kisses regardless of what your young person believes, then yes, you may have to have some what feels like some uncomfortable conversations to advocate for what your young person and the type of culture that you're instilling in your home. It could be uncomfortable initially, but it's also very empowering. And it's also can be good for your young person to see you standing strong, you know, for certain values on behalf of their safety. You might have to get comfortable with some uncomfortable, but it's worth it.
Absolutely. I'll just say anecdotally that, I have two kids, one of them, and my younger one, she's not really like was when she was really little, like she's so cute, right? So everybody always wanted to hug her and my family is very huggy. And I would be just like, no, you can do it. And she just wasn't into it, right? I could tell, like, she just did not want to do it. And so I would just tell her, you know, you can do a high five or you could just wave. And it was such a simple little thing. And I wasn't overthinking it in that moment, but it ended up being such a great thing because I think she just felt like, okay, like I don't have to be forced into this space. And I think that's so important. I'm very like, it doesn't have to be a hug right. With little kids. So yep. That's a really important
because
one.
Because as adults, it doesn't have to be a hug.
We're
preparing them not just for childhood, we're preparing them for their whole lives. And so as adults, no, we should not be just grabbing for what we want. And we know that that's actually not how it works. So why would we allow that? Why would we allow them to create those habits or for other people to feel entitled to impose those habits upon children who, again, are more vulnerable to consent violations and trauma and all of that? We need to sometimes have those conversations. And it's not like your example, because again, it's not just conversations with the adults that are involved, but open conversations with the young person. Mm-hmm. Talk about the options that are available. And if you have a family member that may have some problematic behaviors, if there needs to be some distance created around that to protect you all, or if it's okay to talk with your young person about some realities and some truths that may exist in some dynamics that are in your life. And then you all can talk about and problem solve together. Silence is where shame thrives. And it can create unsafe situations. So talking, communicating, that's the way to go in all this.
So Melissa, we are like running out of time and I'm just so incredibly grateful for your time here. Do you have any like closing thoughts or any like rally cry or like final thing that we didn't hit on before we close out today?
Just that these conversations about porn are an opportunity. They're not a threat. And so you as families, seeing that the opportunity is available every day, and the more proactive versus reactive you all can be and see that you're a team, that you're all in this together in your family unit, that's the best case scenario to create, again, the connection that keeps your family safer. And there are lots of resources, lots and lots of resources now more than there ever has been to support families in having these conversations. So put any kind of pride aside, know that you're not supposed to do this alone. And so I'm really grateful to have been invited to have this conversation. And join us at sexpositivefamilies.com or on any of our social media platforms. And we're always having these talks. And I'm always amazed at how many parents are sharing how they're implementing these strategies in their home and the great outcomes that they're seeing. So it just reminds us that we're all walking this together, and no one is, there's no such thing as perfect.
Just absolutely.
Showing up and,
absolutely.
You got this.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. To find more free educational resources from Amaze, including videos, book recommendations, conversational scripts, and more, visit amaze.org. You can also connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram at Amaze Parents, and on Twitter at Amaze.org. And we'd be so grateful if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.